and Ruth Weiner interviewing Betty Hefner at her home. This is the second interview, November 7th. Betty, would you say a few words just so we know that we have everything clear here?
I'll be glad to, and I hope that this test is fine.
Okay, sounds good. You were very clear.
Oh,
you really? You were very clear. It was very easy to transcribe.
I didn't realize that it got transcribed.
We just want to make sure
you
we have it in all forms. Betty, when we last met, we were talking a little bit about, well, what I'd like to do actually is go back to, you were living in Penn Hills, and could you tell me a little bit more about your family life in Penn Hills, and then when you moved to Square Hill, a little bit about your children?
We moved to Penn Hills 2 years, I guess, after we were married, because my husband was transferred out to the Verona area. He was working and did work for Copper's Company for 35 years. At that time, they didn't have a research center in Monroeville. Subsequently, that was where he worked. Since I had grown up in East End, Penn Hills seemed a logical place to move. It wouldn't be too far away from my roots or my family, and it gave Bob kind of an in-between location for going to work. We purchased a small house in a little community that ended up with 12 Jewish families. We always said if we needed it, we would have a minion. And it was a wonderful place for children to grow up because we had a huge backyard and none of the yards were fenced off so that the children had the run of the neighborhood as they were growing up. However, by the time our daughter was going into, I think, sixth grade, we realized that they were really going to be limited in their independence. We had to take them everywhere they went. And since we were city people anyway, we decided that what we'd like to do is move back into the city. My husband had grown up in Squirrel Hill, and we were very eager for our youngsters to participate in the Jewish Community Center. So we did choose Squirrel Hill to move back into. And in about 1967 was when we moved back to the Squirrel Hill area.
And did you move to this?
To this house, and we've been here well over 25 years now. So our children, except for a few years in the Penn Hills school system, really attended Minidea School and Alderdice High School.
And at that time they went directly from Minidea to Alderdice.
Right.
There was no middle school.
No. Much too young, I felt. And they did participate in the Jewish Community Center activities extensively. Alan took two teen tours across the country. Jane went to Israel with the Jewish Community Center staff. So it was, we felt, a very good move so that they were able to participate. I didn't mention that my first job was with the YM&WHA, and so I have a very special feeling for the Jewish Community Center and what it means to young people and the need it serves in enhancing what families can do. Because during the teen years, families very often are limited in communication with their children, and the young staff that works with the teenagers is a really important component for our community.
Betty, how old are your children? And do they live?
Jane, our daughter, it has just turned traumatic 40, and our son is 37. Jane is a lawyer, lives in the Shadyside area, and works for Klett Lieber, Rooney, and Shorley, which is the old, what was known as the Jewish firm, because it was Berkman, Russlander, Lieber, Engel, and Pohl, I guess.
You're going to have to give me those names later.
Originally, and its predecessor was one that Bob's uncle had worked with. So we were absolutely delighted when she went with the firm. But it has changed dramatically over the years. But we are very fortunate to have her here in the Pittsburgh area. She is the only one of the 12 grandchildren of the next generation who has remained in Pittsburgh. Our son is now completing his fifth year down under. He went off to Australia to work for the Australian government, then worked for the New Zealand government, and is now completing a year back with the Australian government. In between, he has been home, and once we were there, but it's a long way off, and we're very hopeful that this spring, when his contract is up, for this year, that he will be coming back to the States. Prior to going to Australia, he married Micheline Gauthier, a delightful French-Canadian.
Can you spell her name for me,
please? Micheline is M-I-C-H-E-L-I-N, and Gauthier is G-A-U-T-H-I-E-R. And they were married just before they went off to Australia, and so they have been married for 5 years.
Any grandchildren?
No grandchildren.
What kind of work does Alan do for the government?
He's a program analyst. He had worked in D.C. for OMB and the Justice Department, and what he does is look at the most beneficial way that different departments might do their jobs, as well as how they might best work together, which doesn't often happen in federal governments.
And what kind of law does Jane practice?
Jane does business law. As she tried to explain it to me early on, she said, it's really very simple. It's business, marriages, and divorces. And I think
really?
That that's a wonderful explanation of
business, Mary. You wouldn't think that that would all go together, but it makes sense, doesn't it?
Unfortunately. How does Alan spell his name?
A-L-L-E-N.
How would you compare... actually, let's get back to that. Let's move on to your career. You said that your first position after graduate school was at the YMWHA. Can you then elaborate and take us through your career?
It's better
you talk than I talk.
I'd be glad to. It's been diverse and very enjoyable. It was the right decision for me because I am a people person. And as a result, have really enjoyed the work that I've done all through the years. I started, I think I had said last time, as a camp counselor. I was so excited to be able to go to camp, and did so for 8 summers. The people that I met at camp were, in those years, primarily trained social workers, And as a result, I was greatly influenced both by them and by my sister-in-law, Barbara, who was also a social worker. But my bent was toward working with groups rather than clinical social work with individuals. And so that I tended to move toward the community center and settlement house, YWCA kind of orientation rather than individual clinical, and have maintained that throughout. So my first job was at the YMNWHA, and I think I have mentioned that initially I was the young adult worker and then the children's worker. But along came Jane, and I felt that I did not get a master's degree in social work so that a high school graduate would raise my children. And so I quit my job and decided that I would stay home. And I did for a short period of time, and then started to do field instruction for the School of Social Work. Every graduate student has to have experience at a social agency as a part of their master's program. And the school trains and designates people in the field who can supervise the students in those placements. Sometimes it's called an internship in other schools. In the School of Social Work, it's called a field placement. So on a part-time basis, I think I started out just one day a week. I was a field instructor at Kingsley House. I had done field instruction at the YMNWHA before I left, but I did that as a part of my responsibility. After Jane arrived, I just did the field instruction and nothing else.
What year did you started working in 50-51 at the end?
I graduated in 50 and started that summer, I think.
And Jane was born?
56.
Okay, so you were with the Y till then.
Mm-hmm.
And then?
And at that time, I just might interject, my husband was working next door at Mellon Institute.
That's right.
And before that, I guess he was working at Carnegie Mellon, and we used to meet in the park for lunch. It was delightful. While Jane and Alan were growing up, I did...
Alan was born when?
1958. While they were growing up, I continued to do field instruction. But then a wonderful opportunity came along in which there was the Visiting Nurse Association received a grant from the National Institute of Health to study whether it might be helpful for stroke victims to come together as a group. And then I began to work with the groups of stroke victims with nurses.
You worked with the nurses and
each group, there were, I think, originally four groups that were a part of the demonstration model. And each group was staffed by a social group worker and a registered nurse. And in addition, we had the resources of a physical therapist on the staff of VNA who visited the groups, and subsequently I think we had a speech therapist. It was a dynamic and very exciting project to be a part of, and really a predecessor to my involvement in self-help groups, because I was able to see the tremendous progress that individuals and caregivers were able to make as a result of these weekly group meetings. What had happened was that one of the visiting nurses recognized that as people were no longer under medical supervision, that they regressed. They stopped doing their exercises, they stopped eating the nutritionally balanced diets that they needed. And at that time, this was in the 60s, chronic illness and disabilities was really a relatively new concept, because prior to this, you either, medical science either kept you alive or you died, and a tremendous number of people died from strokes. And there wasn't a recognition of the chronically ill. Many of them were hidden away. If you had a stroke, you just didn't go out. And people told us that we wouldn't be able to take them on buses, that we wouldn't be able to do very much of anything. And the very first bus ride we took, the people laughed and cried because they saw parts of Pittsburgh that they thought they would never see again. It was really very exciting. Those groups, by the way, are still in existence. The Visiting Nurse Association, long off of the grant, still sees that still supports the concept of the groups, and there are many of them now around the community. And it all was started because of one individual nurse who recognized the fact that these people might be helped if they were brought together.
And who was she?
Nancy McCormick was her name, and she instituted a group in the Munhall area, and that was the basis on which this whole grant was developed.
Betty, grants die out. How long did you have?
This was a 3-year grant, but then, as I said, the Visiting Nurse Association has continued it, and they now have a staff that helps it to run. They are no longer staffed by a professional registered nurse and a trained social worker. I think many of them are run by caregivers and are much more in tune with the self-help group movement. So that was an exciting aspect of my career.
Were you part of it for the full 3 years then?
From, I think, almost the very beginning, yes. And then I was invited to become the director of the Volunteer Action Center, which was a part of a United Way supported agency called Information and Volunteer Services.
Can I interrupt? Director of Volunteer Action Center, part of
a United Way supported agency called Information and Volunteer Services. And what it did was bring together the flip sides of the coin. People could volunteer, and we developed resources for the community. And the other aspect, the information aspect, was what is now called the helpline, where you can call and find out about resources in the community. Subsequently, these have been divided and are no longer a part of a separate agency. They were taken back into the United Way as a part of the United Way service in the community. But I was director of the Volunteer Action Center for 12 years. And that, again, was a very exciting responsibility because we were, as a central service, we were in touch with all of the health and social welfare agencies in the Allegheny County area and attempted to recruit volunteers for them, as well as help to train volunteers. We did seminars and workshops, published materials, and did whatever we could to support the concept of volunteerism in Allegheny County. And I might mention, on our advisory committee, we tried to have representatives of the major service, volunteer service organizations, and so NCJW was always represented on our advisory committee, and that was how I first got to know some of the people who are involved in the Oral History Project. During those 12 years, the National Volunteer Program was born, initially under President Nixon, because it is a very Republican concept to have the third sector very active. And I was fortunate enough to be able to attend some of the national meetings and get to know some of the national players in volunteerism.
When you talk about national meetings, it was a federal or a national group, but then there were individual groups in the various cities. Did they all come together? Or
many,
in various counties?
Many of them, no. In Pennsylvania, there were not too many that were very active. I think we ended up with about 12 across the state, and when you consider that we have 67 counties in Pennsylvania, that's not a tremendous number. But there were active volunteer organizations across the state. And one of the things that I'm proudest of is that I helped a state organization get off the ground. We went to Penn State, which is in the center of the state, many months getting the Pennsylvania Association for Volunteerism started. And it now is a vibrant organization. We have just had a conference in Pittsburgh this year. And so it's very exciting to see that some of the things that you had a hand in initially are still alive and well and serving people and making a difference.
Today they say that volunteerism is on the wane. Do you agree with that?
No, not at all. I think that volunteerism, like everything else, changes. And they were saying in the 80s that volunteerism was dying because women were going to work in such large numbers. But women have never given up volunteering. They are doing it differently. I think volunteering is now not a social outlet for women the way it used to be. Instead, they want to contribute to their community and they want to know that what they're doing is worthwhile and that their time is well spent, so that they don't necessarily want to come together to have tea and crumpets and spend an afternoon. but they are very willing to volunteer. However, we also have another whole segment of the population that is volunteering, and for them the social aspect is very often important, and that's our retirees. And as people are not only living longer but living healthier lives, many retirees are very interested in volunteering. So it's changed, but I don't think that in terms of the concept of volunteering that it is dying, or it's just going to be very different and continues to evolve.
Can you give us some examples of the activities that the volunteers, just some of the groups for prosperity? Could you just tell us the various groups that are involved in? Maybe I'm not understanding. You directed the overall volunteerism, and then it branched down into the various sectors of the community.
What we did was we recruited volunteers. Right. At one point, we had a Sunday article in the Pittsburgh Press in which they would list the kinds of volunteer opportunities that were available to people. And when we were able to really make them specific, people responded in very great numbers. And then those people were referred to the agencies that had requested that particular kind of volunteer, so that if someone needed help with writing a newsletter, for instance, someone that was interested in writing that was able to get to that particular agency easily would call, and we would link them then with that particular agency.
So there really was a varied, there were varied opportunities.
Tremendous range of opportunities, and what we did was keep the data without computer at that time. We kept the data manually on all of the agencies and their requests in the Allegheny County area. We did not go outside of Allegheny County at that time. After I left, the United Way itself branched out, but at that time it was just Allegheny County. But there were a tremendous number of agencies, and they all had many requests, because no one in the human services ever has enough funds to provide the kind of service that they would like to provide. So as a result, they're always looking for volunteers who will enhance their services.
How did, this is a new concept, or this was a new concept, no? To have a central department that was going to, that would bring the volunteer and the organizations together.
Actually, it was not new. It grew out of World War II, and the Junior League was the service organization that made it happen. They recognized that during World War II there were a tremendous number of volunteers needed in many aspects of the community where men had gone off to war, and of course women as well. And so they started a very small what was then called the Volunteer Bureau, with, and I believe it was started within the United Way, and continued to be a small aspect of the work that the United Way did, because while they were getting the financial resources, they also began to look at the human resources that were out there, and tangible resources. So that it was a concept to whose time had come. But that was back in the early 40s.
And I didn't get there until 1970, which coincided with Mr. Nixon's establishment of the National Center for Voluntary Action on the national level.
Well, you had mentioned also that at the Y, you were doing group work with soldiers, or returning soldiers then?
Well, there were young men, right, who were coming back that first year, who felt the need to get back together with the their friends and the clubs that they had had before going into service. And many of them broke up after a year or so, but it certainly served an important purpose at that time when they were first returning.
So you were at the United Way until 1982?
That's right. 19. And when I was at the United Way in the last years, in the early 80s, I became aware of the self-help group movement because as we were doing seminars and workshops, I recognized that there were people who were attending who